but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Well, it's a big one for the Oregon Ducks Saturday. We know that. Everybody's been talking about it. Yesterday on the show, we talked to the beat reporter in Des Moines who covers the Iowa Hawkeyes. Iowa fans think they can beat Oregon. How will Dan Lanning and the Ducks respond? We'll talk about it on today's show. We'll get a visit from Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver. He's going to talk to us about their upcoming game against Sam Houston State. The Beavers looking for a third straight win. John Wilner will be along. Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News. We'll talk to Wilner about the college football weekend. But we have to start with the Trailblazers, don't we? Stephen, lightning in a bottle. We might have to pay attention to this team. Oklahoma City, the latest victim. First loss of the season, pinned on them by your Trailblazers. How you feeling about that?
I'm feeling good, John. I will say this, a couple things. One, the Thunder were without some of their best players. Chet Holmgren didn't play. Dort, Caruso, J-Dub didn't play. But the thing about last night, though, is the Blazers won differently than they've won other games. We've talked about the Blazers forcing turnovers. They've been over 20 turnovers forced a game, number one in the NBA. They only forced, I believe, 14 last night. And the thing about it was in the first quarter, they did what they always do. They tried to force turnovers. They were full-court pressing. It did not work. And the Thunder are too well-coached. They have too good of players. They got right around it, and they attacked the pressure. They pressured the pressure, as I would say. That's the best way to attack a full-court press is to attack it back. They did that. Wide-open layups, wide-open threes. So what the Blazers do, they kind of reacted and said, look, we're going to continue to pressure. We're going to continue to full-court all game. But we're not going for steals. We're going to work you hard. We're going to make you change directions. If you noticed it, sometimes the Thunder would, you know, get up the court in 6-7 seconds, but they had to reverse their, you know, they had to go left, then go right, then go back left.
Nothing easy.
That tires you out on the back-to-back. Thunder played the night before, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the MVP, was exhausted by the end of the game. Missed a couple big-time jumpers, easy jump shots that he usually does not miss. And that's how the Trailblazers won. They changed it up. They said, look, we're going to put Shai in pick and rolls. We're going to attack him on offense. And then defensively, we are going to make it just as difficult as possible. We're not going to force these steals. So give Tiago Splitter a lot of credit for changing it on the fly. Change the whole game plan right on the fly. Big time win against the Thunder.
Look, I love the way they're playing. I, like you, am watching this game. And, you know, I was curious to see after, you know, the first quarter, it was like 40-20 at the end of the first quarter. Oklahoma City with this huge lead, and I thought, gosh, how are they going to respond to this? They did a nice job in the second quarter, kind of coming back, getting back into the game by halftime. Third quarter was a wash, and then in the fourth quarter, they turned it on. They scored 40 points in the fourth quarter. To get 40 in the fourth, big-time finish for the Trailblazers, and I thought to myself, like, we have, I think, had the luxury. I'm going to call it the luxury, and also the curse. In the last few years, we've had the luxury on this show to be able to ignore the Trailblazers because they did not matter. This show is merit-based. It is a true meritocracy. I said on yesterday's show it's different than other sports radio shows. And careful listeners on yesterday's show heard me talking about driving to the studio. I again drove to the studio today. For people who don't know, I don't do the show from my home studio anymore. Haven't for a while. I've got a studio that is set up and dedicated just for this radio show. Gets me away, gets me in. As I'm making the drive, Stephen, I'm thinking to myself, you know what? We can't ignore the Blazers right now. We have to pay attention to the Blazers. And good on them for doing that. Good on Joe Cronin. Good on Tiago Splitter. I was talking to somebody today. I get out in the world. Talking to somebody today. This lady said, you know, what's going on with that Chauncey Billups thing? And I said, what's going on with Chauncey Billups? Let's talk about the Blazers. They're playing really well. Everybody, I think, still spending some time trying to figure out what happened with those poker games and organized crime and all that stuff and how big is that story. But I think one of the fun stories of the year so far is the Trailblazers getting into their season and putting kind of the Chauncey Billups distraction behind them. And some of that may be, Stephen, that maybe the team needed to get away from Chauncey. I don't know. Maybe Chauncey's not that good a coach. Or maybe this happens anyway. Do you have a thought on that? Does this happen in spite or because Chauncey's not there?
I think it happens if Chauncey's here or not. I don't think that this team would have changed their identity. I think last night might have been a loss, honestly. I don't know that Chauncey necessarily changes things up on the fly as good as Thiago Splitter.
That's what I'm talking about. Like, I mean, do you think they lose, don't they?
I think last night would have been the first time I thought all season, like, this game's a little differently because Chauncey's not the head coach. But I do think overall, in general, the Blazers would still be pretty good. Like, they're 5-3. They have wins over Oklahoma City, Denver, the Lakers, and Golden State. Those are all playoff teams. Like, they're not just beating the bottom feeders. They're beating good teams. I think Chauncey still would have wins over those teams. Last night, maybe not. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's – honestly, it's a crazy story to Chauncey Billups. You got to turn the page on it. Like, he's not going to come back. Thiago Splitter is going to be the guy for the rest of the season. And this Trailblazers team deserves more than just the thought of, oh, that's Chauncey Billups, the gambler guy's team. No, this is like an actual team that can make the playoffs.
I said on yesterday's show that we don't spend a bunch of time recapping the play-by-play. We don't pour over the box score to kind of look at, you know, oh, here's what happened in the third quarter. Here's what happened on the second possession, unless there's a reason to do it because there's a 20,000-foot thing. But I was watching last night in the second half, and I was watching kind of just the energy in general with the Trailblazers and the Thunder. And it became evident early in the fourth quarter that one of these two teams had played the night before and was stressed out, and one of these teams playing young, playing with fresh legs, putting a lot of pressure on the opposition. I don't know when exactly the Blazers would tell you that they smelled blood in the water, but I think it was early in the fourth quarter where they went, I think we can win this game. And I've said this for a long time over the years. I've said that, you know, you see young teams sometimes have to sniff around a little bit before they break through. I kind of felt like last night was a breakthrough moment. And it comes after they lose to the Lakers, Stephen. That was kind of a grounding loss after the 4-2 start. But then they come right back against the team that everybody's picking to repeat, and they look really good against them. I will still maintain, I think they're a playoff team. I don't know if they can, you know, I don't know that they're going to win a series or game in a series. But I think they're going to get into the playoffs. Steven, talk me out of that.
I can't. I think that they're going to make the playoffs. I think they're a play-in team for sure. And this is a team you just don't want to play. The other impressive thing, John, and this is a wider view as well, the loss of the Lakers was a bad loss. Lakers didn't have Luka, LeBron, or Austin Reeves. You need to win that game. They didn't. They didn't look great. Last night, they got down by 20 in the first quarter. It was 41-21 after the first quarter, and the Trailblazers did not quit. Like, this team doesn't quit. And I think that's where I look at this team, John, and I can say this is a playoff team. Because half the time and half the battle in the NBA is, are you going to play hard night in and night out? This team plays hard, man. This team plays really hard night in and night out. The depth has taken a little bit of hit with some injuries, but when you have a guy like Denny Avdija, 26 points, 10 rebounds, 9 assists, he got to the free throw line 16 times last night. He is a physical monster. He looks like an all-star. Like, this team is good, and they play hard, and they play together. So, yeah, I can't talk you out of a playoff prediction. I think that they are.
Is it too early, though? I mean, is the argument that, hey, the sample size is too small, guys? Let's not get excited. There are a lot of veteran teams in the league that don't play hard in the early part of the season. The Thunder are still looking up at the rafters saying, oh, we just raised a championship banner. Let me grab my championship ring. Is there a little bit of that going on at the beginning of the season? Is it possible we're getting worked up over nothing? I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
It is possible because, look, I mentioned the teams that they beat. The Lakers didn't have Luka or LeBron in that win. The Thunder didn't have, you know, players like 2 through 5, their second through fifth best players last night, and the Blazers beat them. So you can poke holes in it. But I've watched the NBA for a long time, John. I don't see this Blazer team letting up. And a lot of times in the regular season, these really good teams that are, you know, competing for championships, they have a lot of veteran players, right? We talked about that. And they will take nights off because they know, like, this isn't important. Like, the Thunder don't care that they lost this one game to the Blazers. It doesn't matter to them. It mattered way more to the Blazers. And I think going on in this season, when you get in the dog days, you know, you get to February, you get to March, the Blazers are going to be playing hard. They're going to be fighting for that final spot where you may catch more teams that are resting players, getting ready for the playoffs. I don't see the Blazers doing that. And they're veterans. Jrue Holiday, he is an absolute leader on that court. He knows where to be. He gets after you defensively. He's the real leader on this team. I don't see it with the leadership that they have, with the young players that are still trying to build a name for themselves. I think this team plays hard night in and night out when a lot of teams are going to take days off and say, look, you know what, we're going to get ready for the playoffs. The Blazers are saying, look, we got to get to the playoffs.
Blazers started the season 4.5-1 to get to the playoffs. They quickly went to 4-1. They got down under 2-1 to get to the playoffs. Now the over-under on their regular season wins, Stephen, is 45. I'm suddenly looking at that going, wait a minute, like, you know, can that be right? And look, if you're a Blazer fan, you got to feel good about this. You got to feel good about the start. And I'm not, you know, I always say it's meritocracy. We'll talk about the things that are relevant on the show. We're never going to be like other shows. We don't aspire to be like the other shows. I don't want to be like the other shows. I take tremendous pride in that. There's a lot of the same that's out there. And I think there's a reason why you choose this show and you participate in this show. And there's a reason why the people gravitate towards it and the sponsors gravitate towards it, but it's different. And I'm proud of that. But I'm going to tell you this, if the Blazers keep winning, we're going to be talking about the Blazers.
It's interesting. Yeah. You say 45 wins because you go back last year, 45 wins gets you in the play-in. The year before, you don't even make the play-in with 45 wins. That's how good the Western Conference was. The year before that, 2022-23, you are the 4 seed. So it kind of just depends on how the Western Conference goes. If the Blazers get 45 wins, they may be home court advantage. They also may be out of the play-in. So that's why that Lakers loss was actually important. You need to get those type of wins, and I think the Blazers know they got to rack up wins whenever they can because that Western Conference is going to be deep and tough.
Well, they are still 50-1 to get to the NBA Finals. You know, you're not. We're not ready to go there.
Pump the brakes on that.
Are we ready to go there?
No, not all the way. Not yet.
We're going to pivot to the Oregon Ducks. They're going to Iowa. Yesterday on the show, Tyler Tackman. We always get the good guests. Tyler Tackman of the Des Moines Register joined us to talk about Iowa fans and Iowa's chances to win the game. He had some interesting things to say.
This is a game where it feels like there's a legitimate shot Iowa can win. And there's something dangerous in the air right now in Iowa City, and that's hope. And that's... The way that Iowa has played the last few weeks, I mean, even the Indiana game, which they lost, they played them closer than Oregon did. And that was a loss that it hurt because of how well Iowa played. And it felt like they really had a chance to knock the Hoosiers off and weren't able to ultimately finish the deal.
There's something in the air. It's dangerous, and it's called hope. I love that.
Is that the most dangerous thing in sports, is hope? I mean, it really is.
Hope is a dangerous thing. It is for a fan base because, look, Iowa's been in this position so many times and lost, and now they're in a position where, like, they're thinking this is the breakthrough moment, just like Indiana did in going to Autzen Stadium. I do think there's a little bit of Oregon managing sort of the pace of the season differently this year that is rearing its head right now. I don't think Oregon was as up for the Indiana game, because they were just up a couple weeks before that for the Penn State game, and then the Penn State game didn't mean anything, and all of a sudden here came Indiana, and I think, I don't want to say that they threw the Indiana game because they didn't, but I think that the energy level wasn't the same for that Indiana game. It didn't feel like when Colorado came to Autzen Stadium with Coach Prime a few seasons ago. It didn't feel like Washington, Oregon playing in a big game last year. It didn't feel like Ohio State coming to Autzen Stadium. It felt just like, oh, here comes Indiana, and Kirk Herbstreit believes that Iowa's going to win this game. Here's Herbie.
Hey, Oregon loses Saturday.
Don't get too loud with it.
You think that?
It's getting real loud.
I know.
Why are you saying that? Why'd you say that so loud like that? This is very early putting that out into the universe. Ty really was wishing you didn't do that on a Thursday, but
I've been feeling like this since the Monday after.
I'm telling you. We all love Dan Lanning. We all love the Ducks and their potential, but there's just something about certain teams at Iowa, when you go to November, the only blessing they have is it's not a night game, right?
No, 3:30.
If it were a night game, it'd be a given. It'd be a loss. But at 3:30, It's going to get dark in the second half. And I'm telling you, Iowa's going to be just typical Iowa. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be like 15 to 12. You're going to wonder, how the hell did we get to 15 to 12? But that's part of the fun with Iowa.
Can Oregon win that kind of game is the question. Does Oregon have the run game? Does Oregon have the physicality to stay on the field? Do they have the quarterback who's going to avoid making the mistake that teams will make in that situation? Indiana pulled it out. They were in one of those 15 to 12 type games, and they end up winning that game. I think they won 20 to 15.
20 to 15, yeah.
Yeah. It can Oregon win that kind of game, Steven?
Shouldn't the question be, though, can Iowa win this type of game? Because Iowa's 0 for their last 11 against ranked teams. Can they beat a team like Oregon? Because, look, the guest on yesterday, we all know this. Oregon is more talented. You look at the recruiting stars, it's all Oregon over Iowa. So can Iowa match up with Oregon? I get that. I think if Oregon wants to battle it out in the trenches, that's where they're going to go wrong. I don't know what they have to do to get past this Iowa team. I think this Iowa team is tough, and I like Iowa to win the game.
You're picking Iowa. I did not. I picked Oregon, but I picked Oregon in a close one. Yeah. I had ugly game, 24-21, something like that.
I think this Iowa team is going to win this game. I don't know. I don't necessarily buy the Oregon. The up front, the big daddies in the middle, and the offensive line and defensive line. They've been pushed around a little bit too much again. Another season where they've been pushed around in certain spots. And I go back to that Penn State game. Look, at the time we thought it was, an even team. Now let's go look at now. Penn State pushed them around in the second half of the fourth quarter. We saw Wisconsin even do some things against them. Wisconsin's terrible. We've seen Northwestern do some things against them.
I agree. Don't you think Dan Lanning's going to get the vein going in his neck, though?
And I think so.
Get them all fired up.
The big one, though, John, is Indiana.
Nobody believes.
That Indiana loss by Oregon really was alarming to me. They needed a stop, right? They got the pick six. They tied the ball game. Indiana went on a long drive the entire field and just ran it down their throats and then finished it off with that Surratt touchdown catch. That was a program-defining drive by Indiana, and I think that could have been a program-defining defensive drive by Oregon. They didn't do it. I need to see them do it. And I think that they can. I don't know that Iowa's the team that they can do it against, because I think Iowa, like Kirk said, at night, in the rain, the weather's not going to be great. It's going to be crazy.
Hater? I think he's a bit of a hater.
They love Dan Lanning.
Let's go. Joel Klatt, he likes Dan Lanning more. Here's Joel Klatt.
I'm just telling you, this is a dangerous game for Oregon. A dangerous game. And it's not just because, Iowa always plays well at home. No. But this specific Iowa team has gotten better and better and better in the specific areas that they need to get better, namely the offensive line. Now, granted, they still don't throw the football almost at all and with almost zero efficiency, but it's still Iowa. They're going to play this complementary style of ball. They're going to play great defense. They're going to run it. They're going to shrink the game. And then if you make one mistake, one, they capitalize. And that's the fear if you're an Oregon fan.
Yeah, that's the fear. But here's the reality. This Oregon team aspires to be a playoff team. It aspires to win these kinds of games. Good teams win these kinds of games. It's a hostile environment, but so was Penn State. I think Oregon can win this game. I also think there's a shot they lose it, obviously, because I think, Iowa's good and Iowa's playing at home. But Danny Cannell and some others, myself included, think Oregon's a little underrated.
The demise of Oregon has been a little bit greatly exaggerated. Do we realize they put up 750 yards of total offense against Rutgers just a couple weeks ago? Like, I know the Wisconsin game wasn't great, but they had a really nice bounce back after the Indiana game. I still think they're the better team. I think they've got the more well-funded team, which does matter. And I don't know. I've just seen enough where I think Oregon's defense should be able to slow down Mark Gronowski and company.
I think Oregon's defense will do fine. The question I have is Oregon's offense. And Iowa did a really nice job against Indiana. They've done nice jobs against other teams. They are good defensively. I think Oregon's got to get to 24 to win this game. I think that's the number. I think they get there. I think it's like 24-21, 23-21, something like that. Right in there, ugly it up. I don't see Iowa scoring more than 21 points.
What was more of the real Oregon offense, the game against Rutgers or the game against Wisconsin?
Wisconsin's not bad defensively.
And the weather was terrible.
Wisconsin is a good defensive team. The weather raised a concern for me because you know how sometimes, like, we all have friends who we know don't like bad weather. And some of us are better in bad weather than others. I have a daughter who doesn't wear a jacket ever. raining sideways, cold outside. She's good. Yet another daughter who needs to be bundled up. Looks like an Eskimo. I think Oregon, to me, in that Wisconsin game, looked uncomfortable with the weather, Stephen. And I looked at that and I thought, gosh, are they soft? Or is it their style of play? Or is this just, it's a cold, miserable night and the rain's going sideways? They didn't look comfortable. Wisconsin handled the weather, I thought, a little better. And granted, Wisconsin can't score. That's Wisconsin's problem. Wisconsin could stop people, but they have scored 0 and 0 and 10. And, you know, they're having a hard time getting to 14. And so I think the Oregon offense is probably somewhere in between. Rutgers is terrible defensively.
Right.
And Wisconsin's pretty good defensively. And the weather that day, it just made me look. And I looked today at the Iowa City forecast. And I think it's really up in the air right now whether they'll have precipitation during the game. But I think it's going to get cold in that second half. I think it's going to be dark in that second half. I think it's going to be a hostile environment, particularly in that second half. I think it's really important for Oregon, a team that has not started well a few times, to get out and have a nice opening drive and get some points on that first drive, because I think points are going to be really hard to come by in that game.
That's an incredible point, because you're right. They have struggled getting out the gate. Unlike, you know, Penn State, they actually did some things, you know, and I think that would be important against this Iowa team. You don't want to get late in the fourth quarter when it is all crazy and have to do, you know, have to score some points. Because if I'm an Oregon fan, I'm arguing that this was that last Wisconsin game was just a get in and get out game. They saw Wisconsin. We talked about it. Like, is Wisconsin going to score a point? That's what we were asking.
Yeah.
They didn't. And so I think maybe if you're an Oregon fan, you're saying, look, Oregon just got in, they got out. Dante Moore left the game with an injury. Like, if that's a real game, he's not leaving that game. There are arguments to be made that Oregon just kind of just said, look, we're going to get in, get the win.
I mean, you saw that cheerleader. You saw that cheerleader picture, right?
Like, she looked miserable.
She was, there was everywhere else in the world she wanted to be. I kind of felt like Oregon's players felt that way, too, that they just didn't handle the weather very well.
And if that's the case, this could be a game, like Danny Cannell said, where we're over-exaggerating the demise of Oregon, and Oregon comes out and scores 35, and it's 35-10 in this game.
I've said this a few times over the course of the season. Like, you know, I watched this team closely. Last year, I watched them up close. Watched Dan Lanning after the Ohio State game on the field, after the Boise State game on the field. He was emotionally spent after they beat Ohio State. Walking around the field, looked like they won the national championship. They were happy, of course, beating Penn State at Penn State, but they had a bye the next week and they kind of regrouped. I don't think that emotion is sustainable as long as the season is these days. I don't think it's sustainable, and I think Oregon had to have learned from last year. Going undefeated isn't the goal, but playing your best football in November and December is your goal. Well, here we are coming up. You know, they've got a game here this, you know, November 8th at Iowa. This is a game where they got to be playing better. Let's see if he's got them ready to play. Coming up, we're going to talk to Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver. I have a question for Walker. I want to know what his DMs look like. Does he have agents slipping in there trying to convince him already to leave Oregon State, to turn pro and go to the NFL? If so, how many agents? I'll ask him those questions. Trent Walker, Oregon State receiver, next.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Oregon State wide receiver Trent Walker joins us every Thursday on the BFT, courtesy of Jamba. Life is better blended. Trent Walker joining us. The Beavers have caught lightning in a bottle. They have won so often in the last few weeks, I think they've forgotten how to lose. Trent Walker joining us. How you doing? Is it true you've forgotten how to lose?
It's been good. Life's a lot better when you're winning, man.
10, like people keep saying 10-7, 10-7. That can't be fun to play offense in a game like that. But I'm like, no. A win is a win right now. What's the locker room like after a game when you guys win and you come in like that?
It smiles all around, especially against a team like Wazoo, an in-conference team like that, someone who we've played in the past, someone who will continue to play in the future. It's always good to get a win against them. The locker room was a lot of fun.
Is it going to be weird to play them again here You know, you're going to play him in like just a few weeks here again. Is there any talk about that on the field? We'll see you in a few weeks, anything like that? Or do you just kind of focus on the game that's at hand?
Yeah, no, I was going back and forth with my buddy over there, number 44. We were talking about how we're going to see each other again. And it was kind of, it wasn't like a goodbye after the game. It was like a see you later. Mm-hmm. They definitely want to get us back, and we want to just prove that we are a better team in the future.
How did, you know, I noticed prior to the Washington State game, there was a report out there, oh, Trent Walker's hurt, he might not play, all this stuff. Give us an idea of what that's like. Is that weird for you to have people talking about you and you going, I'm fine? Like, what, you know, I don't understand what everybody's talking about, or, you know, what do you make of that when you see a report like that out there?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, obviously I'm dealing with some nicks and nacks, but I mean, everyone is in the country. So, to see like a tweet saying I'm out for the season or whatever it was, it's weird. Cause it's, I don't know how they would have got that kind of information. And I don't know how they would get information that's just so false. You know what I'm saying? So it's definitely weird, but, I don't think too much of it.
What do you, when you say nicks and knacks, give us an idea, because most of the listeners are not playing football. Like, you know, give us an inventory of everything that's ailing you right now, head to toe.
a lot of bruises, a lot of contusions, stuff that you can't really rub out. You got to stretch out. You got to, like I said earlier, motion is lotion. I think I started the season off with a sprained ankle against Cal. A contusion, same game. Then I landed on my back, and that one was pretty bad. When I say contusions or whatever, it's like bruising underneath the skin and blood pockets form, and you gotta get them drained and moving around. So there's a lot of that. My body's pretty black and blue from little hits here and there.
Probably feels good when you win. You've won two in a row. Rob Akey, your coach, the interim coach, came on the show yesterday. He's a ball of enthusiasm. He's upbeat. What is it like to be around Akey during the season?
Yeah, it's hard to be around Akey and not be smiling. Like you said, he's just a ball of energy. Of a guy and a good coach. I think he was exactly what we needed. In the midst of everything going on, I'm happy for him. I'm happy that we have him on our side.
Give us an idea. You know, there's a portal out there. You know, I've heard stories that, you know, about agents and others that will contact players during the season. I have to think when your coach is fired midseason, that, you know, the buzzards start to circle and go, hey, Trent, you know, next year I can get you some money, get in the portal. Take us through that, because is that a thing? Is that a distraction? Is that something you have to deal with, or is that just is that not happening?
No, it's definitely happening. I think more guys than you would think are getting Instagram DMs, Twitter DMs from agents saying that other schools are interested in them. A lot of it's third party. Just guys being told something through agents or whatever. It's really only a distraction if you let it. If you're not where your two feet are and you're thinking about the future or you have like a different agenda for yourself than the team does, then it could become a distraction. But I think our guys are still bought in. We got three more opportunities and three more games.
How do you weed out what's real and what's not when it comes to a DM like that? Or do you not reply to anything, or do you give it to someone else to deal with?
Speaking on my experience, I try not to respond to any. I've gotten a good amount of DMs, but yeah, the best way to weed it out is if everyone's saying something different. But if we were just to look through my DMs, like there'd be a certain school that keeps coming up, and you kind of just put two and two together. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely weird. But it's only a distraction if you let it. Because, yep. I mean, having the attention is a blessing, but at the same time, it is definitely not not ideal for a college athlete.
Like, give us an idea. Is it like one, two? Is it 10? Is it a dozen? Is it like too many you could count? With that kind of noise that's showing up there.
In terms of like agents?
Yeah, agents, people, you know, because I can remember, I've talked to guys in the past, guys who were on your team just a year ago, 2 years ago, who, you know, they end up with an agent and then they go somewhere and then they don't really play. And so then I'm going, were they sold something by an agent or were they really getting an offer from another school? But, you know, give me an idea of the volume that you see in your messages. Like, is it one or two guys or is it 20 or 30?
I'd probably estimate anywhere from 15 to 30 DMs of guys that I haven't spoken to.
Wow.
I have three agents, or I don't have three agents. I've been talking to three agents, but that's more so for the NFL if I were to take that avenue next year. Because I think you have to have representation if you want to play in the NFL.
Trent Walker is our guest, Oregon State wide receiver. Do you have a sense yet of what you want to do, or are you putting that off?
I'm trying to push it off as much as I can. I know these next 4 weeks and these next three games are going to fly by, and I'll have time to make a decision. But like I said, I'm trying to just be where my 2 feet are and make the most of it.
This game coming up, Sam Houston, what do you see when you see film of the Bearcats?
Yeah, they're a solid group. They're similar to us in terms of being a couple plays here and there from having more wins on their record than it shows. Defensively, they do a lot of stuff. They'll mix in some cover zero, and then they'll drop eight, and they don't really have a tendency of it. It seems like it's whatever the DC feels. So, I mean, they're still a good group. I know the record might not show it. They're just a couple plays away from having more wins on their record.
It's hard for me not to start to think this way, but, you know, you got two in a row. You got this one this week. You know, there's some momentum here right now. And are guys starting to pick up energy and start thinking about, could you finish this year, you know, with winning five straight? Or do you just have to focus on what's in front of you?
Yeah, I think that's always been the plan, though, was to try to win out. I think the energy hasn't gone up too much, because I feel like we've had good energy all year. I know that sounds like it could be hard to believe, but I mean, like I said at the beginning of the call, winning makes life easier, so it's even easier to have energy day in and day out.
I am thinking back, Fresno State, Houston. I keep thinking if you'd won one of those games, does everything pivot? Is there one that you look back on and you go, okay, that was the one that got away, or can you afford to do that?
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I definitely look back in the season and think that this game on Saturday would be us trying to make a bowl game. I think Houston, Fresno, and App State were all ours to win, and we didn't get it done.
Trent Walker is with us. All right, You're in school. We don't talk about school often, but do you have a class you're enjoying right now, or is it all about football?
I'm taking a couple classes, but I'd be lying if I said I was enjoying taking them. I'm more focused on football right now.
You're not lying. That's good. I like that. I look back, I think now when I'm older, I look back at the classes and I'm like, hey, that was a really good class that I took. I still use and think about things that were taught in that class. But at the time, Trent, I'm not going to lie, I was walking to some of those classes going, man, what am I doing here? I'm just trying to get through my day. It's been fun to watch you guys. You're also enjoying some Jamba. I got to give a shout out to our friends at Jamba. What are you drinking? What are you having if we go to Jamba today?
I narrowed it down. My top two are white gummy, and I'm still going with that orange dream machine.
Like it. I like it a lot. All right, Trent Walker, good luck to you. I'll see you there. Sam Houston State Saturday at Reser Stadium. Beavers looking for three in a row. You got lightning in a bottle. Keep it that way.
Appreciate you having me on.
Okay, Trent Walker, there he goes. Fascinating stuff about the agents and his DMs. And gosh, can you imagine? Can you imagine? Because the agents got into Damian Martinez pretty good a couple seasons ago and convinced him that Miami was the place to go. And what happened? He didn't really play. He didn't really wasn't really a contributor. You know, he may have cashed the check, but you know, it didn't work out in the way that he thought it might. There've been some other guys like that on the Oregon State roster as well, where things have happened. But between 15 and 30 agents sliding into Trent Walker's DMs trying to sell him on the idea. And I'll tell you what happens. They sell him on the idea that they've got a deal for them that's out there somewhere with another school. Whether they have the deal or not is up in the air. And then the player starts to listen, and then they go out to the other school and go, hey, I can get you this player. And Trent Walker's one of those guys with a coaching transition. You have to think agents would go, circle him, number seven. Let's see what we can get him. I love that he's being honest with us, being forthcoming, really, really authentic and honest, too, about his classes. Come on, you know, don't let school get in the way of your education. You know, I'm not saying that's a message for everybody, but it's the message for today. All right. Keeping it going. We've got a great show still ahead. Leave it here. You got the BFT statewide. John Wilner later in the program.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, you heard Trent Walker, the Oregon State wide receiver there. I guess I'm not surprised that agents have dropped into his DMs. Stephen, between 15 and 30 agents, he says, have dropped into his DMs trying to talk to him about potential deals or other schools or whatnot. I don't see him as an NFL guy for next year, but I think, you know, if you're Oregon State, you got to think of him, about him as a potential flight risk for sure. And how about the distractions towards the end of the season here? Were you surprised by that, or what did you make of Trent Walker's honesty there?
I love the honesty. First of all, I you know, a lot of people will just make up an answer, or, you know, come up with a reason not to actually answer that question. He said it truthfully. Like, look, man, there's people reaching out to me. I don't find it shocking because I think this probably happened before. Like, just because it's NIL and money, is you can now pay these players, I don't think this didn't happen before. I think it's happened before. I think it's a lot more widespread now, where I think there might be, like he said, third-party people at other schools that are saying, look, man, so-and-so needs a wide receiver next season. Would love to have you here. Feel free to contact me. I think that happens a lot more probably nowadays than just the agents for the NFL. But I did love the honesty. Not shocking, but... I would say this. I'm not shocked that it happens. I'm shocked that it's 15 to 30. There's really 30 people after every game hitting them up. That is pretty crazy.
Hey, great game. You know what? I got a guy at another school says he could use you.
Hey, Auburn needs a receiver, you know?
Yeah. And we've seen guys, you know, Damian Martinez came to mind. I talked to Damian Martinez when he left Oregon State for Miami. And we talked for a while about, you know, the offer that Miami had given to him. Damian felt like the newspaper had done a poor job sort of telling the story of why he left and you know, whether or not there was money that was owed to him or not. You know, did someone renege on a deal or not? You know, Oregon State's collective at the time, Damnation Collective, was paying these guys with quarterly payments. To their credit, they weren't giving everybody a lump sum up front. Try giving a 19 or 20 year old kid a lump sum up front, and then I'll tell you what happens. It's kind of like when my oldest daughter went to college and I said, okay, I'm going to give you all your money for the month on the first of the month and really require you to budget it. It was a great idea in theory. You know what happened around the 17th or 18th of the month? Dad, you know, like we all been there. And I went, okay, we're going to break this down into every 2 weeks. We'll make a payment and then we'll see if you can manage that. And then we'll graduate to every month. Damian Martinez got, you know, a payment from Oregon State, $100,000 payment. He went out and bought a, you know, $65,000 car. Not really thinking about, you know, am I going to owe taxes on this? Am I going to have to, you know, am I going to have to go you know, pay taxes on it? Am I going to do something else? Like he didn't really think about it. And so, you know, he ends up going to Miami. He got paid more money. It was a business deal. He also knew that Aiden Childs was gone and Jonathan was leaving and, you know, his coach was leaving, all that. And he was loyal to Oregon State through spring ball because why? Because he got a payment on April 1st. He got an NIL payment. So he was playing the game. Do you blame the agents? Do you blame the game? It shouldn't be this way. You shouldn't have agents in your DMs while you're in week 11 of the season.
You shouldn't, no. I don't blame the agents because that's kind of their job. I don't blame the players for going out and get the money. Like, I don't blame Damian Martinez for getting the money and then spending it on a car because that's what I think 95% of college kids would do. Like, they get that money, they're going to go buy something cool with it. I don't blame the agents. Don't blame the players. I blame the NCAA for causing this whole problem. They put their head in the sand for so long of not wanting to, you know, give anything to the players. They took the hard stance of, look, you're a college athlete. That's all you should deserve, and blah, blah, blah. And while I don't like that players are getting paid all this money, and I do think that NIL is going to be a problem, that it's going to turn college football and college sports into just minor league systems for college basketball and college football, which are my two favorite sports, I think that they should have been getting something. There should have been some type of cut that they got before this situation has happened. So I blame the NCAA in this whole situation, John. They just said, look, we're the NCAA. We're going to matter no matter what. And people pushed back on them, and then they folded like a pair of twos.
It's poor governance, and it's bad ideas. And now you've got the portal. At least they limited the two portal windows down to one. And they've, you know, cut the dates to the point where it won't be as big a distraction late in the year. Still a problem. And the agents, though, aren't stopped. Like, there's no NFL Players Association that requires the agents to register when it comes to college. And what I found, and I'll go back to the Damian Martinez situation, you know, Damian Martinez did not have, like, an NFL agent representing him when he left Oregon State for Miami. He had a guy who was representing him, who was well-versed in doing deals for, like, UFC fighters and combat fighters and other disciplines. And that's fine. That's where his area of expertise was. But it raised red flags with me because I was like, okay, this is not a certified NFL Players Association agent. You know, who's doing this deal? Is this guy just getting a cut to deliver Damian Martinez to Miami? And I can remember, too, how happy Mario Cristobal was at the time when he got Martinez. I reached out to him and I said, hey, you're getting a good player. And he was like, you know, we've got, you know, so much depth, we've got so much talent, you know. And I thought to myself, gosh, I wonder if they're telling Damian that while they're recruiting him. Like, you know, there's so many guys here, you're not going to come here and be the bell cow back that's going to get 1200 yards. I think Damian hurt himself as far as his NFL prospects by going to Miami. I think if he stays at Oregon State, he rushes for 1,000 yards last year.
I think you're right. I think he did probably hurt his NFL draft stock a little bit. But I do wonder if it's going to change as we get farther along in this whole situation, because it was so new. Like, the whole situation was so new with, like, Damian Martinez, where it's like, look, yeah, I can go make more money and go to Miami, and they don't even worry about the depth chart at that point. I wonder if we're in 2030. Players are kind of figuring out, like, look, I can go make, you know, let's just say $100,000 and be a backup over at Texas, or I can make $20,000 and be a start at Oregon State, right? Like, you know, 5X less, but I'm actually going to play and it might help me get to a draft stock. Like, I wonder if players are going to learn that a little bit as we get forward along and look and say, it's not all about the upfront money. Like, it's really not. You can really help yourself out other situations. I do wonder if players and agents and schools are going to learn these things. Because I want to ask you this question. Because wasn't agents always a problem around college campuses? Like, weren't they always crawling around anyways before the NIL?
They always were. They always have been. Or if it wasn't the agent, it was somebody working in the agent's office that became the problem. Because the agent was worried about getting reprimanded. If he was a regular agent that was certified with the NFL Players Association, the agent was worried about getting slapped on the wrist by the NFL. And so often you would have third parties who were acting on behalf of the agent going, hey, you know, we can get, you know, you sign with this agent, you know, float you a loan, whatever. But it's not illegal for these guys to reach out to Trent Walker. It's not against the rules in college football for Trent Walker to have an agency or to talk with agents. It's just different. It's new. They've always been a problem. And I also think that players are more accessible than others. This came up in the gambling thing. Several players who were, you know, former NBA players from back in the day said, hey, you know, guys couldn't get to us. You know, they couldn't, you know, Doc Rivers was saying this. He says, you know, back in the day, there was no Twitter. There was no Instagram. Couldn't have some person that was a bookie or a runner between a bookie or somebody who wanted to organize a poker game. couldn't get to an NBA player to get them to come to their poker game. I think what Trent Walker is saying is, man, when I go into my DMs, there's a lot of noise in there. And I am watching that, not just with Trent Walker, but you have to think about that with Dante Moore. You have to think about, you know, for Francisco Mendoza. You have to think about, like, looking around the country. What's Jaron Chiave Sagapolotelli's DMs look like, you know?
Like hundreds of DMs.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, all these guys are going to be pursued in a way that they were never pursued before. I do think with unionization needs to come some representation on the player side that quiets some of the noise. Maybe the agents need to be registered. Maybe if, a person trying to organize a third-party deal approaches a player, there should be some, you know, measure which, you know, it's a penalty or they're reported, you know. I don't think that it's sustainable to do it the way they're doing it. And I worry, you know, we watched teams last year, Oregon, one of them, didn't play their best football at the end of the year. We don't know if that was just a 24-day layoff. Is it possible that at the end of last year that, you know, Oregon had a bunch of guys who were, you know, high prospects that had just a bunch of agents just swarming them for 24 days, and that contributed to Oregon kind of being distracted in that Rose Bowl? I don't know. Leave it here. Hour 2's ahead.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I love that tour of the underbelly of college athletics that we get when we get a guest like Trent Walker, who's willing to come on and talk about it. He was mildly uncomfortable. I don't know if you could catch that, Steve, but there was kind of just a mild discomfort with it. Not, you know, not all the way. I don't know if you caught that, but...
Well, it was like, it's almost like he was deciding in that moment, what do I say here?
Like, he didn't want to lie. You can tell.
He didn't want... He's not a liar. Both these truth.
I like Trent Walker. He's one of these kids, I think, we'll know him beyond... And I also think, did you hear him talk about his glasses?
I did.
He's not that excited about his glasses.
Hey, look, you know what? College, it's not all about the classes you take to get your education, right? It's the other things you learn in college that'll get you through. I have a business degree. I'm really using it. I can tell you that.
Oh, you probably do. Let's not knock your degree. There's a lot of good things you learn in class.
Well,
but you can't let school get in the way of your education.
You can't. And just because you study one thing doesn't mean you... know what you're talking about.
My degree is in English literature. I still use it. I use it all the time.
I've never was using my degree.
You probably have.
But I don't need a business degree for this job.
Yeah, but haven't you made decisions in, you know, your household that you probably have leaned on things you learned in class?
No way, that's Coach Vaughn's, bro. Coach Vaughn makes those decisions. I don't touch those.
Well, he's honest. He's honest. I was trying to give you some dignity here, my friend. We got a great hour ahead. John Wilner will be with us later this hour to talk about the college football weekend. You can tell my voice. I said it yesterday. I said my voice. I thought it was going and it was hanging on. Kind of back in that position, Stephen, where I'm hanging on to the voice. So I would like to play some Punch It audio here. And then I'd like to open the phone lines in the second segment of this hour to our listeners as we talk about the Trailblazers, as we talk about the Ducks, as we talk about the Beavers. It's going to be a meritocracy in the second segment. I said this show will be dictated by that. There are some people out there that aren't comfortable with the fact that we have open segments on this show. We leave the segments open for a reason, because the structure of saying we have to talk about this topic in this hour at this time, that structure is so limiting, and I think is so so small-minded. And it goes back, like, early on in radio, I picked this up pretty quickly from, like, no offense to the people who have come up in the radio world, but I found myself surrounded by producers and people who weren't who had very limited thinking, and they were like, "Well, what are you going to talk about in this segment? Well, we should book 5 guests a show. We need to fill up all these segments. What are we going to do with all this open airtime?" And I'm like, "You know what we're going to do? We're going to have a conversation. We're going to talk about anything, and we're going to see where the show goes. Sometimes a caller might call in." I even had somebody tell me we shouldn't take calls. If we didn't take calls, we wouldn't get all the, you know, there have just been some amazing callers over the year that we have gotten to know on this show. And granted, they're not always lucid, but, you know, there's a whole bunch of people who have called into this show over the years, and we have, you know, we've had these wild conversations that, you know, that go all over the place.
He wants to weigh in on the crystal ball front. Go ahead, Sam.
John, that's why we come to this show, because you bring it and you have it, and it, great interview. I am not a Duck fan, as I've stated many times, but I do like Mario Cristobal. I understand why he left. I think he's a great human being, a great coach.
I mean, we'd never have a guy like Sam calling into the show. We would never get that. We would never get caller Mike bringing the heat.
So, man, first of all, man, you know, ever since we've been born, all our lives we've heard that good guys finish last. Now, if you guys want a good guy, you're not going to win no games. You got a bunch of good guys down there on the Trailblazers. They ain't been winning no games. You got to, you know, when college players come to college to play sports, there's two types. There's the type that their mamas took them to the games. Their mothers are the ones that introduced them to sports. And when they get into the pros, they're salties. And then there's the kind of player that fathers took them to the games and gave them the introduction. The Rasheed Wallaces, these kind of guys. You know, you're not going to win anything with mama's boys. You got to have daddy's boys out there. Like that guy said the other day, you got to have some dogs. You know, because it's all about the pedigree.
There it is. We wouldn't have those things, Stephen, if I didn't take calls. You know, open segments are good. You know, if callers want to call in, we'll do this. We'll do this now. In fact, I just said we're going to do Punch It Audio. Maybe we're not. Let's go to Paul, who's in West Lynn instead. 503-417-7575. Paul, what's up, man?
Thank you. I'm an amazing caller, too.
Thank you, Paul. You are.
always appreciate you. You know, I decided the pinnacle to American life is to be an 18-year-old male, because you can be 18 with no job and the government will provide you hundreds of thousands of dollars to go to college with no way of proving you can pay it back. And on the flip side, you can be 18 and catch a ball real well and make more money than probably 90% of Americans. And 18 years old is probably prime. 18-year-old male.
18-year-old male that can run like a 4.45 40. How about that? Or is, you know, but look, there's a little bit of meritocracy in that. Like if you can play, then, you know, you can earn. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. We're going all over the country today. Let's go to Kansas City, Missouri. Michael's in Kansas City. Welcome, Michael.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to address, honestly, some of the hand-wringing about this Oregon-Iowa game. I wish that Oregon fans would just listen to the adage that Dan tells some of his players. Don't panic. Just have lots of fight. If something goes bad in the game, go on to the next play. And here's the reality. The Ducks need to respect their opponent, no doubt. I mean, I'm going to be at the game with my wife and my brother. But at the same time, too, it's crazy to say that the Ducks are going to lose. Also, you know, yesterday you guys were talking about, when has Dan Lanning and his staff ever outcoached other staffs? How about the Penn State game? Mm. The Ducks were 5-for-7 on fourth down. They had a beautiful double overtime interception that was schemed up in a perfect defensive play.
True.
I also think, like, if you're talking about the Ducks and, like, their ability to be able to be physical with Iowa, you know, being in the Midwest here, when the Ducks joined the Big Ten, everyone around me was saying that the Ducks are going to get out physical, that they're all flash, no substance. And then we went 13-0 last year. And so you know, I just think that people like Kirk Herbstreit doubting the Ducks way too much. The only thing that's good that I see about this is I think that Dan Lanning plays up when the Ducks get doubted. So, I say let the naysayers doubt the Ducks, but I think that people are blowing this up way too much. You should
a lot of hand-wringing.
Iowa as an opponent. Yeah.
Yep. A lot of hand-wringing. The nervous Nellies are out. Does that come with being good? Do you attract a bandwagon with nervous Nellies on it? 503-417-7575 is a number. Jared is in Woodland. We're going from Kansas City to Woodland. Jared, welcome.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Hey, I was at the Blazer game last night. Probably the best basketball game I've ever watched in person. And I just kind of want to get your take on it, because I wasn't sure if I'm in an echo chamber or not, but the last 3 minutes of that game, it looked like the officials are doing everything possible to get that game to the Thunder. What
are
your opinion on that?
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Steven, did you feel like the officials at the end of that game were trying to, you know, if you're gonna knock the king off, you got to kill the king? Was there a little bit of that going on late in the game or not? I didn't see it that way, but did you see it that way?
Sorry. Well, I was answering
the
phone
call. Saying the officials, did the officials try to give that game to Oklahoma City late?
Shea's going to get his calls. He's the MVP of the league. He gets calls. I think that he gets a good whistle, but he does get fouled and he gets pushed around. You have to go into the games knowing the refs are going to stink. Like that, for the NBA, they're going to not give you a lot of calls. So no, I don't think that they tried to get the Thunder back in the game. I think that the refs just stink in general, and you got to know that going in. And when you go against the NBA champs, they're going to get the benefit of the doubt on the call. So I'm not a blame the ref guy.
I'm not a blame the ref guy either. And I like that I like too that Blazers team kept playing. That fourth quarter was inspired. And, you know, I think Oklahoma City would basically look like a team playing on the second game of a back to back. Let's go to Steve, who's in Central Oregon. We've gone from Kansas City to Woodland to Central Oregon. Steve, what's up, man?
Hey, I wanted to talk about high school football and the playoffs and rankings and how they come about it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a what?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on. Yep.
There's three teams that ended up four wins, one loss in the league. Those three teams beat each other. The team that got left out of the playoffs only lost 3-0 in single overtime. The two teams that went, each had one loss, so it's a tri-championship or however they want to explain it. Yet there's a team getting left out of the high school 3A playoffs.
Yeah. I'm looking at the 3A. Who got left out? I'm looking at the 16 teams in the bracket. So Madras didn't get put in the bracket. I don't know enough about it. Steven, you know anything about the high school football rankings in the 3A division?
Unfortunately, I don't. Not enough for me to give an opinion on it.
Yeah, here's what I would say about all of this. Let's try to remember a little bit of, like, you know, if you're the 17th best team, 18th best team in high school football in the state, there's no shame in that. I also think it's a good reminder to me that we need to get somebody from the OSAA on the show.
Yeah.
Be great this week as the playoffs are, in full swing. But I pulled up the 3A bracket very quickly. Looks like Pleasant Hill is the number 16 seed in the bracket. And, we'll see that in the 6A division. Roosevelt and West Lynn playing coming up this weekend. But West Lynn is the one seed. Anybody beating West Lynn? Anybody going to beat them? Central Catholic's the 5. You don't really see that. Nelson is the 2. We'll see how that unfolds. Charlie's in Vancouver. Now we're going to get a bunch of high school football calls. Charlie, what's up, man?
I promise I won't talk high school football. Hey, excited about the Blazers, and it's been a long time. Really excited about Tiago Splitter. Last person to ask him a question last night said, because the Blazers played so well in the fourth quarter, do you think your team is learning how to pace themselves and be better at the end? And he goes, I hope not. I love this guy. And I think I was worried about not having Thibault and Wesley, I think his name is, because they're both really good off the bench and defensively. But, man, for them to do what they did last night was super, super impressive, super encouraging. I think we might have a Scoot Henderson problem coming up. because I'm not sure he's that good, and I am sure that Blake Wesley brings it defensively, and Matisse Thybulle is maybe the best defensive guard in the NBA, and Scoot Henderson is neither one of those. I'm afraid we'll have a chemistry problem, but I'm so impressed by our coach talking about how they talked about, why didn't you get Young Henson in there? I don't want to throw him in the fire. I don't want to throw him in the fire. Yeah, that's it. I just don't want to throw him in the fire. And I love that he didn't. That was awesome.
Yeah, and look, I think what you're getting right now from this Trailblazers team is, you know, and I'll admit, I watched Joe Cronin assemble this roster. And, Steven, you can chime in here. But I watched Cronin assemble this roster, and I thought to myself, gosh, you know, feels to me like he's following the blueprint of the Minnesota Timberwolves and Oklahoma City Thunder. Everybody always compared the Blazers, I think, in the last 7 or 8 years to what was happening in Denver, but you don't have a Nikola Jokic in the middle of that. And so I think the next best thing is to get a bunch of interchangeable pieces, a bunch of players who are, you know, 6'6 to 6'9 and go, okay, I'm going to get a bunch of good athletes that all can kind of meld together and play different positions, and we're just going to be a really tough out. We're going to be no fun to play against. And you can sit around and do that when you don't have a Cooper Flagg coming your way and you don't have a Victor Wembanyama coming your way. I think it's the next best thing to do. Am I reading what Joe Cronin's strategy correctly?
Yeah, long, athletic, switchability on defense. That's what they want to do. The five-man lineup of Jrue Holiday, Shaedon Sharpe, Tumani Kamara, Jeremy Grant, Denny Avdija. Jrue Holiday 6'4". The tallest guy is probably Denny Avdija 6'9". Jeremy Grant 6'9". So all in the same, you know, all in the same, you know, place right there. They can switch everything. They have a 140 offensive rating. That means they score 140 points per 100 possessions, which is amazing. They have gone small ball a lot this season, John. You're right. They can do it because defensively those guys are going to get after it. And those guys can switch. And that's the whole thing. When you go small in the NBA, can you guard? Can you rebound? Well, these guys can. And so I think, yeah, I think you're right. I think Joe Cronin looked at a team like Minnesota and just said, look, they switch everything, man. Like, they're just going to go at it. And then you got a Rudy Gobert and a Donovan Clingan. If they're in the game, they're going to protect the rim. So I think that is a good thing that they've done, and they are missing that star player, Denny Avdija. Can he turn into that? We'll see. Him and Shane are the guys, but right now they're going to win defensively. The caller makes a good point about Scoot Henderson, though. Where does he fit in with this team? Now, Blake Wesley did have surgery. He's going to be sidelined for 8 to 12 weeks. So Scoot's going to come back and get a chance to play, but Blake Wesley did bring a lot. So that's the thing is, offensively, they've struggled, but they're bringing back Scoot, who you hopefully can take a next step. Maybe Denny Avdija becomes an all-star. Like, there are some signs of this Blazer team becoming good, they're missing the star guy.
I have the question. Which jersey is safe to buy? This is what parents want to know. They want to know, come Christmas time, they're going to buy a jersey for their kid. It's going to be a Blazer jersey. They haven't done it in years. Whose jersey are you buying? Is it safe to buy a Denny Avdija jersey? Is it safe to buy a Scoot Henderson? Is it safe? You know, is it? We've asked this question over the years.
I would say it's safe to buy Denny Avdija. It's safe to buy Tumani Kamara. Tumani Kamara.
Jeremy Grant, you're not buying that jersey.
No. Jrue Holiday, no. Shaedon Sharpe would be the next up because he just signed that contract. But the way Tumani plays defense, I don't think you get rid of those type of guys. Like, we've bought our kids' jerseys, and we bought the youngest one a Tumani Kamara jersey. Like, he's not the biggest of Blazer fans, but we're like, who's going to be on the team? Tumani Kamara is the answer.
That's the question, right?
It's Denny and Tumani. Like, I don't see them getting rid of those because the contracts are too good.
Jrue Holiday was asked about the bounce back. Blazers were down 20 at the end of the first quarter.
You know, I feel like we just had to get a feel. There in the beginning, I think they kind of punched us in the mouth, and you kind of felt it. You know, they had 40 points in the first quarter. So I think from there, we just kind of turn up the intensity a little bit, which we have to do from the beginning of the game. But and to that, just trying to be consistent in everything that we do. Offensively, getting the spacing, offensive rebounding, and then defensively, they have such great guards that even us picking up, you know, they in the beginning, I think they got a lot of easy layups. So just trying to take that away and take away the easy stuff and make everything contested.
Portland's 5-3. We've only seen 8 games. I always withhold judgment until I see about 20 or 25, but you're starting to hear talk like these guys believe. And so much, you know, we heard that guest yesterday who said, you know, there's a dangerous thing in the air in Iowa City. It's called hope. There's a dangerous thing going on in Portland right now. People are starting to hope for this team.
There really is. There is. And I'm with you. I'm trying not to get over my skis. Like, I still have expectations of making the playoffs, but nothing more than that. Like, I understand where this team is at, but they haven't had this type of team in years. Even with Damian Lillard, like, they were going to make the playoffs, but you knew they weren't a real contender. They're not a contender this year at all.
All right, if Lillard were on this team right now, do you think he would be holding them back a little bit if he's getting minutes, or do you think he's complimentary to what they're doing?
I've had this question. I've been holding off on it because I don't want to be negative. I don't either.
It's not his fault. He's hurt and he's on the team.
Right. I'm not the biggest Damian Lillard fan. I think he has a lot of flaws to his game that gets overlooked because he hits 35-foot three-pointers and people love it. But I've talked to people, and they said that when Dame came back to Portland, he was under the understanding that he wasn't going to be the star player anymore. He had to take a back seat if he wanted to come back. Now, I don't know if that's true. That's what I've heard.
If this team is good, if they're running without him, and then he just joins, then you look at him as a complimentary piece, which I think is ideal for everybody.
Right. So if that's the case, he comes back, he can help this team a lot because they need someone that can shoot. They need someone that can kind of play make on offense, and he can kind of be hidden around on defense. If he wants to come back and say, look, I'm still the guy, like, this is my town, I'm going to have a statue in front of the Motor Center, I think that's where it could be a problem and he would hurt the team. I think Dame can figure it out, but it is a question that I have in the back of my mind.
Now, he's expected to miss the whole season, but if he fast-tracks the rehab and he can play in a potential play-in series, do you start thinking about maybe him coming back? Or do you just go, no.
Have you seen the videos? There's videos that are starting to circulate of him warming up and dunking and shooting threes and making moves. I mean,
everybody's saying 26, 27, but I think it might be the most Lillard thing ever to be like, hey, wait a minute, everyone's having fun? Let me get out there.
And that's the thing. Dame rushed back with Milwaukee, right? Like, he had the calf injury with the Bucks, decided to come back in the playoffs, tore his Achilles. So it wouldn't be out of the ordinary for Dame to do that. There is a question in the back of my mind, like, is Dame going to go revert back to old Dame? Because when I worked for the Blazers, they said the hardest thing to do is to adjust your role. Well, you know what? Dame's role has always been, I'm the man. That's hard to adjust to go back to being a role player and just a shooter.
There you go. You heard it here first. Lillard's coming back. All right. Punch and Audio's coming up.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Oh, I like the music, Steve, and I like what you're doing there. You pick those or they randomly come up?
Oh, this is all me, John. I chose the Ice Cube today. It was a good day.
So do you do what you're in the mood for? Is that what you do?
Yeah, I don't always choose. There is a random bed. Like, if I have time between the break and I feel like choosing a song, mm-hmm. I do that. But other times, we go with the old school what we've had in the past.
Because you've done that before where you, like, if Dan Lanning's coming on, you'll bring on a song that he likes.
Yeah, like yesterday I did Walk the Line, Johnny Cash, for Rob Akey.
Oh, yeah. I thought Rob Akey was going to sing for us.
A little disappointed.
I was disappointed. He didn't want to do it. Remember when Jerry Glanville used to come on the show back in the day? People nodding. Yeah, look at all the producers nodding. Jerry Glanville used to come on the show, for people who don't know, back in the day. And he was a big Johnny Cash fan. And so we used to play this song when Glanville came.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down.
We used to play that, and Glanville loved it because he was a big Johnny Cash guy. And Glanville was famous because he left, he's notorious for leaving Elvis Presley tickets when he was a coach back in the NFL. I don't know if he left him tickets to Portland State games, but Glanville liked that Johnny Cash. We played When the Man Comes Around for Glanville, and he loved that. He loved that. We should have, it's like a walk-up song. What did you play for Lanning that one day that he liked so much? You remember that?
It's a Tyler Childers song. It is called, let me...
Do you still have it?
Yes, let me play.
Cue it up. I want to. So Lanning, because Lanning mentioned it when he was on air, and then you played it, and I and later he goes, "Man, was that random?"
It's called All Urine, like urine, but urine.
Every once in a while.
I guess yearn could be it too.
Driving through the road work, oh, the works they took forever on the road. Cones blur like memories of the miles we share between. The place you learn to say your prayers.
I feel like, keep that plan as a bed. We're going to do a little mixing here, okay?
I don't know. I mean, this league's it's got more variety than people realize, so every week's a little bit different. But this is certainly one. When I talk about Iowa, you talk about a team that has an identity, and if they've had an identity for a long time, ever since Coach Ferentz has been there, it's been really clear. You know, they're going to play great defense, be really good on special teams, be physical in the run game, you know, and be able to take advantage of shots and opportunities there. This team certainly has an identity, I'll say that.
See? We get fancy
we're
here.
We're good.
That works. It's not the same as like playing back in the day. We would play cuts that were like Titanic song mixed with a lot of the highlights. I can remember like when the Ducks were playing and we would get like the Jerry Allen call. We'd mix it with the Titanic. Let's see if we have a little bit of Civil War. How about this one? How about this?
To kick it off, white uniforms, white helmets, approaches the ball, right footed kicker, into the ball, and this one's going to go high and not very deep. It'll be Tony Brooks James, actually a couple of yards deep to the 10. 15, he's got some speed.
Tony Brooks with a touchdown. Jerry Allen on that one. Hey, how about the Marcus Mariota cut? Do we have that one still? Can somebody cue that one up? Okay, here we go. You got it.
First and goal at the 9. Mariota, play fake, looking, throws.
Right, how about that? How about the Brandon Roy game winner? I think we got that one up there.
Late to inbound. The Blazers have a 20-second timeout. They come up with the second whether to use it. Late now throws to Roy. Brandon, a three-pointer out front.
I think if we put the Titanic to a lot of different cuts, we would be just fine. Will anything come out of this Oregon-Iowa game? We shall see. We get fancy on this show. You see that? All right, let's play some Punch It audio. Why not?
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio, presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, it was the Blazers and Denny Advia with a big three. Blazers down the stretch, 40-point fourth quarter to seal it against the Thunder.
SGA with 31 tonight. 35 minutes. Oh, Denny at three. His previous four. A three for Denny. He's got 26, 115 to 106.
There it is. Denny Advia and the Blazers with the win. Sam Houston State coach Phil Longo talking about the Beavers. They got the Beavers on Saturday at Research Stadium.
You know, with regards to the approach heading into this week, I tell you that we closed this game up pretty quickly. And, you know, our focus now is on the final third of the season. You know, our good coach told me one time, they remember what you do in November, and that's our focus right now. And so we are locked in one game at a time, and we'll start this trek through November with Oregon State on Saturday away.
It's 0-8 Sam Houston State playing against the Beavers, who have won two straight. Oregon State might get a third one. Barstool Sports Big Cat here talking about ESPN. Big fight between ESPN and Disney and YouTube.
ESPN is f***ing everyone because ESPN's got a new app and they're basically just going to hold their... And they also own Hulu and Fubo. They're screwing over everyone who has cut the cord and went to YouTube TV. And it's just f***ed up. It's f***ed up. They're just screwing over the consumer, the people who just want to watch sports. I just want to watch sports. That's all I want to watch. I can watch the shows I watch are on Netflix or HBO. Let me just watch sports. I don't watch any other TV besides sports.
Mm-hmm.
Give me all the sports in one place and let me pay for that and stop with this bullshit where everyone is trying to squeeze each other out for an extra dollar, screwing over the people who just want to watch sports. Also, guess what? ESPN, your app is garbage. It fucking kicks me out all the time.
That is true.
I just don't get it. I don't get it. Just figure it. Like, it seems like the only one who gets screwed over in all this is the consumer.
I reached out to Bob Thompson, the former president of Fox Sports Networks, this morning. I said, tell me what I need to know about this. And he says, look, this is ESPN and Disney against YouTube. It's just a typical programmer-distributor pissing match. He says, it'll get done. It'll get ugly first, though, but... He says it's the programmers do this. They time the expirations of the deals to when their most watched programming is likely to occur.
But that's the problem, them, John, is they missed Saturday and Monday Night Football. Usually they get it done. They missed Monday Night Football. They missed College Game Day and all the games on Saturday. Like, this has gone on for
it's
way
intentional.
Farther than usual.
I'm telling you, it's intentional. Remember the Big Ten Network? It took them 3 or 4 weeks to get it done at the beginning of the season last year. Big Ten Network had that distribution issue with Comcast. This is intentional. The timing of this is not accidental. That it's sports season and there are NFL games and there are big college games on. This is not accidental. This is a leverage play all the way between the distributor and the programmer. John Wilner is coming up. We'll talk to Wilner about the college football weekend next.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Huge college football weekend coming up. Oregon going to Iowa City to play Iowa. Oregon State at home against Sam Houston State. It should shape up to be a big one in other ways as well, as you've got BYU and Texas Tech playing. That is a big game with college football playoff ramifications. You've got Miami trying to prove that it belongs in the top 12. I suspect Miami's going to go out and win by about 40 this weekend, trying to prove that. You got games like Washington playing at Wisconsin, Washington trying to keep it going. Can the Huskies do that? I want to talk about all that, plus USC, all of that. We're going to talk with John Wilner of the Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News. He joins us every week to talk college football. Wilner, before we get too much into the games, your takeaways on the college football playoff ranking reveal. What are you left thinking about after the reveal?
I thought that they, on the whole, did a pretty good job relative to last year, certainly. The top 10 specifically, you know, the deeper you get, the easier it is to quibble. Certainly Miami 18th and Notre Dame 10th is interesting, given that Miami beat Notre Dame head-to-head and they have the same record. Three Big 12 teams ahead of the highest-ranked ACC team, Virginia at 14, was interesting. But, you know, they got the top four right, whatever order, you know, Ohio State, Indiana, A&M, and Alabama, those were going to be the top four, and they got them. And then the second tier is pretty clear as well. I did think Oregon was properly ranked. I know it surprised a few because they're lower than they are in the AP poll, but quite frankly, Oregon doesn't have a win over a ranked and has played one ranked team and got beat badly at home. So I actually have no problem with the Ducks where they are, given in their resume.
I watched the reveal with the sound off, and then later I go back and I look at the transcript and I listen to the Mac Rhodes interview, and you know, the audio of that is available to media and available publicly. And Mac Rhodes says, you know, he's the Baylor athletic director. He said he kept bringing up the word, hey, they look like we thought it was almost like the eye test is a thing again. What did you make of kind of the comments of Mac Rhodes?
Every year the committee is a little bit different, and what it emphasizes is or de-emphasizes is a little different, and the makeup affects it. How many coaches are on it, how strong the coaches' voices are, I think matters a lot. And, you know, if you're going to get coaches kind of moving the discussion or leading the discussion, you're probably going to get a committee that focuses more on eye tests and metrics and that cares more just about winning than maybe strength of schedule. You know, a lot of coaches think beating Alabama State is the same as beating Alabama because a win is a win. And when that's the case, then the committee is going to be focused more on actual record than on the quality of competition. We'll see how it plays out. But certainly based on yesterday or Tuesday, it seems like, yeah, maybe the eye test is going to kind of have more emphasis than it has in past years.
I mean, it's interesting because I rather enjoyed the reveal, not hearing all the shoulder programming and all the belly aching from the pundits. And then, you know, I was very interested in what the chair of the committee had to say. And I was like, gosh, did he say, look, we saw.
Yeah.
And then I went back and it was like 7 or 8 times he referenced kind of what they saw or what they looked at. What do you think in general? I mean, the Big 12 did well. You brought this up in our video cast on YouTube, Canzano and Wilner, for people who want to check that out. But you brought this up, this idea that, you know, you've got a Big 12 AD as the chair, and it was a very friendly poll for the Big 12. Last year, Ward Manuel was a Big 10 guy. You got a lot of Big 10 representation. We had that big snafu with North Carolina in the NCAA tournament. You brought this up. I mean, what are you seeing there as it pertains to the chair and sort of the atmosphere in the room?
I'm just seeing people being people. And if you spend as much time with someone as the committee members spend with each other, you're going to develop a relationship. And subconsciously or consciously, whatever, you know, I think that the chair's preferences kind of have a little bit of an impact. And the chair, you know, he doesn't have to recuse himself unless they're actually talking about Baylor. Right. So Mac Rhodes, Baylor AD, can be in the room when they're talking about Big 12 schools. The chair leads the discussion. Just think that it's only human nature to have some kind of for there to be an influence in the committee. I don't think they should have ADs be chairman, the chair. They should have a completely neutral chair in both the men's basketball and the football selection committees. They have got to get rid of having an AD, an active AD, leading the discussion.
What do you think about just having coaches as part of the poll? And, you know, I say that knowing Ivan Mizell, the writer, you know, with Sports Illustrated and other places, he was part of the committee. You had a bunch of ADs being part of the committee. Where do you stand on who should be on that committee?
I don't actually have a big problem with ADs as long as they're not the chair. I would not support an all coaches committee because I think that, again, coaches care too much about just winning and losing, you know, that every game, it doesn't matter who, you know, it's like the Lou Holtz thing, right? I mean, there's no difference between playing Navy and playing Ohio State. A win is a win. And I don't want that mentality completely dominating the committee. I think it should be a part of the discussion, but not the entire discussion. You know, they could bring in some more media people. They could bring in some of the analytics gurus. But I generally think it's okay if a chair is a neutral party. That, to me, is the biggest thing. I've done the mock selection for both men's basketball and football. The chair has got a lot of influence. And if the chair's from a certain team in a certain conference, there's no surprise if that conference gets treated well.
Help us out with that, because most of our listeners have not been in that room and gone through that process. When you say the chair has influence, give us an example or an idea of how that plays out in the room.
Well, they are saying, all right, here's what we're going to do. All right, we need to move on to this discussion. Okay, what do we think about this discussion? They are, you know, there are also, I should say, you know, the college football playoff has a group of staffers that are also in the room that are providing data, that are putting stuff up on the screen. you know, making sure that all the key points get addressed. But the chair leads the discussion, as they would in any, you know, any committee, in any walk of life. And the recusal policy is limited to the team, right? So last year, Ward Manuel, this is my big conspiracy theory, you know, Michigan failed to recruit a quarterback, so Michigan's kind of stunk last year. And they weren't in the playoff discussion at all, which allowed Ward Manuel, Michigan's AD, who was the committee chair, he didn't have to recuse himself because Michigan was never part of the discussion. He could be in the room when they were talking about Indiana and talking about Penn State, talking about Ohio State. And I think that that actually had an impact on how the Big Ten was treated. And if Michigan had been better and part of the discussion and Manuel recused himself, maybe the things would have turned out a little bit differently.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News, Bay Area News Group. I want to talk about a few games here. Northwestern's at USC in this big Friday night game on Fox. USC's a two-score favorite, a 14-15-point favorite, playing at home against Northwestern. Northwestern has not been bad in Big Ten games. They've won 4 of 5. They're 3-1-1 against the spread in conference games. What do you think about USC and Northwestern?
Well, I do think USC's been good at home, right? They pounded Michigan and looked very good doing it. I just, Northwestern, I think, is coming off a bye, if I'm not mistaken. So they've had 2 weeks to get ready. Big Ten likes to give the Midwestern teams 2 weeks before they head west. But I don't know that Northwestern could hang with USC for 4 quarters. USC can really score, and when they're at home, they play very confidently. I kind of like the Trojans, even though that's a pretty big number.
I am looking to the Saturday games, obviously. Some focus on Oregon at Iowa, 12:30 on CBS. The beat reporter who covers Iowa for the Des Moines Register told me, quote, "There's something dangerous in the air right now in Iowa City, and that's hope," end quote. Iowa feels like it can compete in this game. Oregon is a 6.5-point favorite going to Iowa City. What do you think happens?
Well, I do think the weather could play a role. Not that Oregon is unaccustomed to rain, but if it is raining and there's wind, especially if there's wind, it could create a little bit of a slog, right? It's a lot harder to complete downfield passes if the wind is bad. And if it's a slog, I think that favors Iowa because it's a closer game. Maybe there's fewer possessions, more running plays, and you tighten the game, and then all of a sudden one play here or there in the fourth quarter could make all the difference. I mean, Iowa played Indiana to a tie game in Iowa City until like 2 minutes left in that one when Indiana finally scored to go ahead by a touchdown. So Iowa played a lot better against Indiana than Oregon did. And that, to me, is something that you need to kind of take into account.
I am looking at, you know, the Stanford's going to North Carolina. Yeah, I know Stanford's going to play Elijah Brown, a sophomore at quarterback. Carolina's been better in recent weeks with Bill Belichick. Carolina's a 7.5-point favorite. I think Carolina's going to cover that, but what do you see with North Carolina and Stanford? And obviously, this is heading towards a big game eventually.
Well, Stanford has been very bad on the road in ACC play. Average margin of defeats, like 4 touchdowns. They haven't really been competitive. So you factor that plus the fact that Carolina is getting better. I saw Carolina in person at Cal. I wanted to see the Belichick train wreck. And they actually were okay. And then they played better and they just beat Syracuse for their first win over a Power Four team. So it seems like they're kind of finding their footing a little bit, and combine that with Stanford being bad on the road, I think that Carolina will end up winning this game handily.
I am looking at Washington going to Wisconsin, 1:30 on the Big Ten Network Saturday. Huskies in control of their destiny to some extent. Washington's an 11.5-point favorite going to Madison. I think that one's going to be tighter than the spread, but what do you see?
You think the Huskies and Ducks are sharing a chartered flight to the West? They are. It's interesting. They're both. This is the last trip to the other side of the country for both teams, and one's in Madison, the other's in Iowa City, couple hours apart. Both day games, and I think the weather is going to be bad in Madison too, which, again, you know, harder to throw the ball, more running plays. Thornton's the game. And you look at how Wisconsin played at Oregon in the rain. Their defense is pretty good. So I kind of think that's too many points.
Yes.
And Washington, it's worth noting, Washington has not covered the spread since they entered the Big Ten beginning of last year. They have not covered the spread in a road game in the Eastern and Central time zones.
Interesting. Yeah, I kind of see like
0-7.
I think it's like a 7-point game, a 10-point game. It's something like 24-14, 21-14, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't think Wisconsin can score, but I don't think Washington's going to run away from them either. A game that I'm finding rather interesting here, Nebraska's going to UCLA. This one flipped. Nebraska was a favorite, and Dylan Raiola's out. He was declared out. Now UCLA's a favorite. This is an interesting game. Can UCLA win this game, Wheeler?
Oh, I think so for sure. UCLA's had 2 weeks to get ready, and Nebraska's making that long trip after playing a tough game against USC. That's the Big Ten doing it dirty to one of its 14 schools. They don't usually do that kind of thing, but it's hard to play a road game when the host has had 2 weeks to get ready. Now, Nebraska, T.J. Lateef, their quarterback, he's from Southern California, so he went to Orange Lutheran, and you figure that he's going to have a lot of fans in the crowd, family, and will want to perform well. Now, that could backfire, too, if he tries to do too much and makes a bunch of mistakes. But I think UCLA will win that game. I to me, that spread is off. It should be more like 4 or 5 points.
John Wilner, you're the best, my friend. I appreciate you. Thanks for all you do, and thanks for coming on every week.
Thanks for having me.
Great stuff from Wilner. If you missed any of that, you can grab the podcast. Go to Apple Podcasts and make sure you subscribe. You can also subscribe to the Canzano and Wilner podcast on YouTube. Find it on YouTube. Just search for me on YouTube and you'll locate it. Good stuff earlier in the program from Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver. I'm still marveling over the idea that he's got a bunch of agents who are in his DMs trying to sell him on ideas at other schools. It's got to be crazy. Don't often think about sort of the distraction that happens late in the season. Wrap your mind around that. Big college football weekend. Ducks certainly looking for a W at Iowa, going into Iowa City. We'll talk about that coming up. Plus, Steven's got the 5 at 5. We're going to lead you right into Thursday night football here on the Bald-Faced Truth.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the Bald-Faced Truth.
I got to give a special shout out today to all the callers, especially callers in hour two, who helped save my voice. You got to play hurt. Dan Jenkins, he wrote it years ago. You got to play hurt. I'm getting through. Steven, I got to thank you, too. You've been carrying some of the load today.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate that. You know what? I do what I can. I'm all about the team. You know this. I'm all about the show. So,
can you tell when my voice is kind of hurting a little bit? And you're like, I can tell you jump in a little more.
Yeah, definitely. I can tell a little bit. Today was that day. You know, yesterday you were down out a little bit, but you really buckled through it. Today has been a little tougher sled.
I'm sounding deeper in the voice. We're going to do the 5 at 5 here. We're going to lead you right into Thursday night football. Thursday night football. The show coming live to you from Studio X. Yesterday on the show, I said, you know, I was driving to the studio. And had a persnickety little individual who was like, "You don't drive to the studio. You do your show from home." Oh, I beg to differ. I drive to the studio. Some people don't know. Some people don't know.
The more you know, John, the more you know.
Pay attention.
That was Reading Rainbow?
No. Yes.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, but did you have the Saturday morning? Did you have like the little conjunction junction? What's your function?
on the Saturday mornings? Probably didn't. Probably
no.
Before your time.
Yeah, it was a little. I know what you're talking about, but yeah. No. I mean, we had Saturday morning cartoons for sure, but not the. Not conjunction.
Do you remember Menudo on Saturday mornings? So that was a thing like in the, I want to say, early 80s?
No, that was a little before my time, too. Yeah. I was born 87, so I was a 90s. I was a 90s boy.
We only got two TV stations where I lived as a kid. We got the NBC affiliate, and we got the ABC affiliate. And so I think Menudo was on ABC. ABC made this effort to kind of, it was a Spanish-speaking band called Menudo. And they made an effort. They were trying to get, I think, connect with Spanish-speaking audience members. And so they put Menudo on ABC on Saturday mornings. Well, it kind of screwed up my Saturday morning because I wasn't into, like, a Spanish-speaking boy band. And we only got one other channel. And so it would be like, you know, Meet the Nation was on the NBC affiliate, and Menudo on ABC was on. And I was like, where is Scooby-Doo? What happened to the Mystery Machine? Yeah, what happened to the Mystery Machine? We're going to give you the 5 at 5, take you right into Thursday night football. Let's do it.
The 5 at 5. Number 1.
Well, John, we've talked about the Blazers being actually sneaky good this season after the win over the Thunder last night, 121-119. And I think they're good. I think we both kind of think they should be competing for a playoff spot. Well, now is the time to get in, and the Trailblazers are celebrating that by announcing today that they have another commemorative glasses set coming out. You know, the sweet glasses that you get, that you can drink out of, you get between the games. They had these back in the 90s over at Dairy Queen. They brought them back a couple years ago. They then brought them back last year. Well, they're doing it again. The first 5,000 fans in attendance will get the glass, and here is the official list. November 19th against the Bulls will be Jeremy Grant. Sometime between December 10th and 17th, it'll be an NBA Cup game, but that'll be a Damian Lillard glass. January 5th versus the Jazz, Jrue Holiday. February 6th versus the Grizzlies, Denny Avdija. Need one of those. February 24th against the Timberwolves, my birthday. Give me that. Jan Hansen, he gets his own glass this season. That'll be a hot commodity for sure. But so someone give me some tickets on the 24th. Happy birthday to me. And then March 23rd against the Nets, Tumani Kamara. So, again, we talked about stuff the Blazers can do to get fans back. Like, we've talked about that all offseason. Well, new ownership. Now they're, you know, they're bringing back the glasses. This brings back nostalgia for people like me who grew up in the area in the 90s. Great move. And, I mean, I think the glasses are cool. Last year, we got some Shaden Sharp and Klingon ones that we still use. So I'm excited about it.
It's kind of cool because the team's good. And that's part of the reason why people are coming back. They're winning games. But, you know, look for these Dairy Queen style Blazers glasses at a Goodwill in about 5 years. That's where they'll all end up. But I think it's cool. I think they're trying to do something to connect with their fans.
Number 2.
I was going to say right next to the Johnkins on a bobblehead, but that might have been a jerk move.
$1.99.
All right. Well, remember during the NBA Finals when Stephen A. Smith was caught playing solitaire on his phone during the middle of Game 4? Well, yes. Stephen A. Smith just signed up to promote Solitaire Cash. And this is an interesting move because Papaya Gaming, who makes the game, is being sued and is under lawsuit for committing fraud through false advertising. And because they promote their games to be totally fair and skill-based, but in fact, they are rigged. Because people are actually wagering real money on these games that you can beat the solitaire faster than somebody else. And the games have come out to be fake. A judge wrote in an October 27th opinion, he said, it is undisputed that Papaya used tailored bots to control the outcomes of the tournaments. By doing so, Papaya could prevent players from winning or allow them to win, no matter how well they performed. It's not only Stephen A. Smith, though. He's not the only ambassador. ESPN Talents, Dan Orlovsky, Mina Kimes, Laura Rutledge, Kendrick Perkins have all been promoting this the solitaire cash with a hashtag beat Steven, and also world champion boxer Terrence Crawford has done it as well. The gambling stuff, now you're getting involved with companies that are fraud, you know, facing lawsuits for rigging games. This cannot be a good look. ESPN cannot be happy.
You got to be careful what you endorse. I'll just say that. Like, you know, anybody knows that who's in that position on a much, much, much smaller scale. Look, I do endorsements on this show, and I had one of these pajama companies one year that, you know, they do the matching PJs for Christmas. They reached out. They wanted me to pick out the PJs. I found the experience to be miserable. I came back to them, and I said, I don't want to endorse you. Keep your PJs. And everybody got all mad. But, you know, if you're involved in this solitaire company, you better make sure they're on the up and up because you're going to get roped into it.
Number 3.
Incredibly sad news out of Dallas is the Dallas Cowboys defensive end, Marshawn Kneeland. Yeah. He passed away early this morning with an apparent self-inflicted gunshot, according to law authorities. The team put out a statement, did not mention the cause of death, but the Cowboys have made counts and resources available to all players, coaches, and staff. Players are on their bye week, not scheduled to practice again until Monday. But Kneeland, he was the Cowboys' second-round pick out of Western Michigan in 2024, so such a young player, 24 years old. And it actually, on Monday night, John, he scored a touchdown off of a blocked punt. And then days later, apparent suicide. So, I mean, if anyone needs help, man, reach out. Reach out to me. Reach out to John. Like, I'm social media, anything. If anyone needs help, man, everyone's here for everyone. Just extremely sad news. You never know what people are going through.
Good time to talk about mental health and wellness. I know it's sad stuff with Kneeland and, you know, anybody who's 24 years old who ends their life. I always think about these things, and I think about, you know, gosh, it's a long-term solution to what might have just been a short-term problem for Marshawn Kneeland, and you know,
and you just I mean, scoring a touchdown Monday night, you'd think he'd be on top of the world. And
you don't know.
You just don't know. You don't know
what's
going on.
Yeah, you don't know what's going on with somebody.
Number four.
Well, Arizona State got a big win this past weekend over Iowa State on the road, and a lot of people are saying it's because of Kenny Dillingham. As he apparently, now according to sources, he went into the locker room and meeting rooms last week, unexpectedly entered every single position room and told everyone, I'm back for at least the 2026 season. Like, I'm not leaving anywhere. There has been a lot of reports that he might leave to go to Florida. He might go somewhere else. But Dillingham apparently told all of his players that he is coming back. According to one of the parents of one of the players, he said, quote, he just walked in, said he wasn't going anywhere next year, and that is going to be business as usual. Then he left, and then he did it with all other positions on the team because he said those players heard the same thing and they talked about it afterwards. So, you know what, Dillingham going right in the face of it and saying, look, dudes, I'm not out. We're still together. Let's try to win this game. But do you think Dillingham ever leaves Arizona State?
He's not going anywhere. He's crying in that news conference. Remember when he got the job? He's home. He's not going anywhere. Kenny Dillingham staying
money
at ASU.
Money can talk, though, John.
No, I he's mean, not going
if
anywhere.
I, if
no,
I'm Florida,
no way.
I am offering whatever you want.
Well, let him offer it and then just go back to ASU and get a better deal. Like, but here's the thing. I really kind of admire that Kenny used it to help his team get up for a game. I mean, he wasn't leaving. This is brilliant.
Number five.
We got a little Thursday night football is why we're heading out a little bit early. The Raiders, 2-6. A little disappointing season for the Raiders. I thought they'd be a little bit better under Pete Carroll, but Ashton Jeanty struggling a little bit. 2-6 taking on the Denver Broncos, and Bo Nix, 7-2 on this young season. Broncos are about 9.5-point favorites in this one. I'm not buying the Broncos, I'll be honest. I still don't buy Bo Nix as like an elite NFL quarterback. He seems like he either dinks and dunks or he throws it 50 yards down the field. Anything in between that, it seems like it's going to be an adventure. But I think the Broncos win this game.
Broncos and Bo Nix, just one of many teams in the NFL. You know, Oregon starting a whole bunch of quarterbacks this week. Did you see that? Like, how many quarterbacks?
QBU, man.
The Ducks have going in NFL games. I think it's a lot of fun. Five former starters all starting in the same week. So big thing for the Oregon Ducks. All right, we have Thursday night football coming up. I'm back tomorrow. Hopefully my voice comes with me tomorrow. I appreciate everybody who has powered through this with me. For everybody who said, you got this, I appreciate that. I encourage you to grab a podcast of the show. Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver, was dynamite in hour one. John Wilner was great in hour two. Steven, appreciate you. Thanks to the callers. We're back tomorrow.